everybody. Welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast. We are the web's number one source for information on the Boston Red Sox farm system from top to bottom, from not Yawkey Way, which I screwed up last time because it's not Yawkey Way anymore. Thank you for the correction, Mike. But from Fenway Park to McCoy Stadium and all stops in between, including places like Sugar Land, Texas, and Kentucky for the Battle of the Bourbon Trail and things like that that we'll get into in a bit. But anyways, thank you for listening. My name is Chris Hatfield. I am the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I am joined, as always, by our director of scouting and number one Alpha Athletics juice pig himself, Ian Kundle. Ian, 2 weeks in, we've got lots of baseball-y stuff to talk about that's new.
We made it 2 weeks.
We did. We almost didn't.
I was not convinced we were going to.
We almost did.
At several points, but... Yeah, we made it. It's good to see that baseball is going on, and it seems that MLB is finally getting its act together and making the protocol what it should have been at the start of the season. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that.
Kind of keep it going and have it be safe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so we can focus on the baseballs. Lots to discuss there. We've got 2 weeks of baseball. We're of course going to have to talk about the pitching staff in Boston a little bit. Talk about roster machinations, other transactions, things going on in Pawtucket as well. The Paw Sox are streaming their sim games, which I think
God
we were
bless them. My favorite. It's my favorite part of the day. I genuinely look forward to hearing Mike Antonellis, Jim Kame, and
Josh Mallinger
every afternoon talking baseball, because it's like a sense of normalcy that I honestly did not think we would get this year.
By the way, kudos to the Paw Sox for like bringing in the entire three-man
booth. I love it.
It's for
fantastic.
Sim games.
That's fantastic.
Good for them, man. That's great.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm pretty sure the Red Sox are the only team broadcasting their games.
Well, it's funny because I didn't realize that, and I was texting with a buddy of mine who's a scout, and he told me the teams he has. I'm like, are any of your teams like broadcasting their alternate training site stuff? And he's like, I don't know. You tell me. I was just kind of like, oh, I guess I was taking that for granted.
No one's doing it. I mean, it's awesome. It's a lot of fun to watch. I think it's nice for Pawtucket, you know, having some publicity and getting, you know, it obviously is the last year in Pawtucket. So actually getting to see some baseball there, I think, is really nice. And it's just it's been nice for us, especially given what we do, you know, getting to see the prospects.
Yeah, it's been cool. It's been a pretty quality, all things considered, production. And so we're going to have some prospect stuff to talk about. We've been watching those. If you're my boss and you're listening, I haven't been. But no, we've been keeping an eye on that, and we've got some things to talk about there. And we've got a bumper crop of emails in. We've got, I think, like, it might be 10. Let's see, 2, 4, 6. Yeah, I think it might be 10 emails. Some of them are pretty quick. But, we'll hit your emails as well. If you want to email us at podcast@soxprospects.com. As we love to say, we want to talk about what you guys want to hear about. So please send us your thoughts, questions, concerns, anything, really. Just send it in, and we'd love to get it on the air. If this is the air, I don't know. Is a podcast the air? Anyway. And of course, as always, if you want to support the podcast, head over to patreon.com/soxprospects. You support the podcast by pledging a certain amount per episode. And, you know what, here's your homework assignment for this week. If you know someone else who listens to the podcast, tell a friend to contribute. You know, I'm a patron of a couple of podcasts that I listen to, not baseball related, but, you know, a couple of other podcasts I listen to. Just a good way to show your support. And we appreciate all of our current Patreon supporters. And as always, we want to shout out our $5 level Patreon supporters. That's Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Trainer, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall, Evan Kirkwood, Hurricanes 1, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, David B., Ben Burnett, Al Mendel, Kevin Catrides, Ben and R.I., Paul Denyer, Lendl Martin, Cassandra Bukta, and James P. McMahon. Thank you to all of those folks for their support. Also, of course, I want to give a shout out to the Ludlow Thieves for our intro and outro music, All the Money. Good stuff there. We appreciate it, guys. Ian, shall we dive right in? I just heard I have a message. I hope it's not from you because I haven't seen it.
I did not send you a message.
Okay, it might be from work. But at any rate, where do we start? Because, I mean, I think the last episode, Ian, was right before the announcement of the roster. There were a couple of curveballs in there in that Brian Johnson and Chris Mazza didn't make it initially. Mazza eventually did come up. But Phillips Valdez,
who's been really good,
who's been really good. Who was the other surprise? Why can I not remember who the other surprise was?
It was wasn't it Matt Hall?
No, we knew Hall was going to make it. I think it was Godley came up eventually.
No. There was one up from opening day. I'm looking at the roster right now. No, it was Matt Hall, wasn't it?
No, we knew he was going to make it.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, Dylan Covey.
Right.
Like the day before the deadline.
Yeah. And actually, I was listening back to the last episode, and the assignment clause in his deal, I think it wasn't quite what we thought it was, because the Red Sox specifically noted in their release saying all the moves they did to finalize the opening day roster that he was added to the 40-man the day after they acquired him, and he was on the opening day roster, pitched once and got sent down. So I think it must have been that he needed to be added to the 40-man roster and that he needed to be on the initial 25-man or I guess 30-man roster.
That makes sense, because he was up for like a couple starts or a couple outings and then they got rid of him.
Well, he only pitched once.
Yeah.
He only pitched once. He pitched in the second game and they sent him right down and called up Mazza, I think. Zach Godley came up. So, yeah, I mean, look, the story with this team so far, the kind of headline has been the pitching, and we probably do need to talk about
headline, not in a good way.
Well, fake news.
Before, can we just talk about how right we were about Jonathan Lucroy and how he had no business being on the opening day roster?
Well, it wasn't that he had no business. It was
in roster construction terms, it made no sense to add him to the roster. That was our point.
Well, so here's the thing.
We were right.
Go, you finish. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting.
No. I was just going to say, like, our whole point was just roster construction-wise, it didn't make sense to carry three catchers, and I think we got proven out because they took him off the roster and no one claimed him after, like, 3 days, or what was it, like, a week, and he got one at bat.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Here's the thing, right? With a 30-player roster, or I should just say with a five-man bench, they're not – I mean, how much run has Zue Lin gotten? How much run has Jonathan Arruz gotten? Like – they're not playing much.
Well, that's my point, but especially with catchers where you already have two, and if something happens, you're allowed to have a third catcher with you at all times. It just made no sense to carry three on the active roster. That was my only point just on that. But yeah, moving on to the pitching, shall we?
I guess. I mean, you know, do we want to finish? Well, we'll get back to the lineup because I have some things to talk about in the lineup. I had a long discussion with a poster in our forum there. He kind of brought me around a little bit on one thing.
I had a tweet about a certain member of the lineup that we probably should talk about because I'm very concerned about this individual.
We should talk about that too.
Yeah.
But the pitching's been the big thing, especially because to me, Ian, a lot of it's two things. One, there's the sticker shock of seeing the pitching staff listed on the opening day roster.
Yeah.
And my point at the time was, look, when they constructed this team, Chris Sale and Eduardo Rodriguez were the number one and number two starter.
Yep.
The bullpen top four arms were probably going to be Workman, followed by Barnes and some combination of Darwin's and Hernandez and Josh Taylor.
I think those were they were the four they were counting on, definitely. Right. Yeah. Like those two lefties, I don't think I didn't even realize really until I looked at it how good they were last year.
Yeah. They were both very good.
Josh Taylor was one of the top, like, middle relievers in baseball last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and mm-hmm. Darwin's and Hernandez, I mean, he walked way too many guys, but he was very, very good last year also. Like,
and there's all kinds of potential.
He struck out 16.9 per nine. Like, his K9 was 16.9.
Yeah,
like,
that's crazy. So here's the thing. By opening day, because of Tommy John surgery for Sale and COVID,
which we should talk about. That's just
the Red Sox had lost four of their top seven, maybe, if you want to throw Eovaldi in there, pitchers.
I would say, yeah, four of their top seven.
Four of their top seven, comfortably. You could argue top six, but I would say top seven.
I would say Eovaldi belongs in there. Yeah. He's healthy and he looks really good.
Like, that's a tier, right? That's a clear tier.
And there's, like, a pretty big drop-off between that and then, like, Heath Hembury's of the world, who's in that next tier.
Well, you've got, like, Perez when he's throwing well.
Heath Hembury.
Hembury, Walden, Brazier, Bryce, Brewer.
See, I think it's just, like, Walden, Hembury, and Perez. I think there's a significant drop off after those guys too.
Yeah. Well, so coming in anyway, regardless, you're taking out four of your top seven pitchers. Now you're having a 30-man roster in which you're adding two more pitchers who wouldn't normally... Well, no. You're looking at a 30-man roster when normally you've been looking at a 25-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
So you're adding two or three... In this roster, actually, the way they constructed it, you would normally on a 25-man roster have a four-man bench.
So 12 pitchers.
With 12 pitchers. You now have a five-man bench and you're adding four pitchers?
Yeah, so you're carrying 17, right?
They've got nine 16, and five sorry. Is 14. It's 16-man staff.
Yeah, sorry, it's 16-man, yeah.
Well, actually, initially it was 15, and then they designated Luke Roy and called up Mazas. Right. Now it's 16. Anyway.
Right.
You're adding three pitchers you wouldn't normally have that would normally not have made the team. So it's sticker shock because that's three more names that shouldn't technically be there.
So it's basically seven pitchers that would have opened in the minors made the team out of camp.
Right. Plus the injury guys, you know, and so it's there's a lot. That's why I say there's a lot of sticker shock when you see like, oh dear God, Josh Osich, you know, Jeffrey Springs, Matt Hall, Chris Mazza eventually comes up. Who are these guys? Dylan Covey is up of it originally.
Well, because like in a normal year, those guys are rotating between one spot. Like, you know what
or
I mean?
Or none. Yeah. I mean, nor, none. Yeah. You know, and plus they add in the injuries. So it's a very weird looking pitching staff. That said, yes, it's not good. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying it's not good. It's bad.
No, it's very bad.
But it's bad because of the fact they lost four of their top seven guys to injury. There's not a lot of pitching staffs in the game that could stand up to that.
No, I mean, like, not every team has the depth of the Rays or, like, the Braves or teams like that. You know, most teams are, like, the Red Sox, the Cubs, who a couple injuries and their bullpens are shot and their starting rotation is a big issue. Like, that's what a normal, you know, I guess the Cubs rotation is good, but their bullpen has been a disaster this year, even though they're somehow, like, 9-2.
Yeah, well, and I mean, look, Kimbrel's been a disaster, right?
Kimbrel's been awful. One of the other guys has been, like, their bullpen's just not been good.
Right.
And like you look at like the Red Sox and I don't think the bullpen has been that bad, right?
It depends on what you consider a bullpen is the other thing too.
They don't miss any bats. I guess I'm considering like the late inning guys. If you put in like the bulk guys, yeah, it's been bad cuz like Jeffrey Springs, Matt Hall, those guys are getting in trouble in their 2-3 innings of work.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that one Mets game, like it's just they don't have leads ever late in the game, so
Well, and it's weird because it's like Godley has basically he's had two appearances. The first appearance, I should say, we're recording this the night of August the 6th, Thursday. Godley's first appearance, which was weird. They pitched him four innings in relief, but it was like the fifth, sixth, or no, it was like the last four innings or something.
No, I thought it was the fourth through the eighth or something. Or it was weird.
Yeah, it was like. I thought they were doing an opener for him, but they did an opener, and then it was like Osich opened the game.
And Springs
was followed by Springs for two, and then they brought Godley in. And I was like, well, what the hell's the point of that?
Yeah.
Like, you should have just started him.
I guess maybe he wasn't ramped up. I don't know.
But then he threw four innings.
Yeah, it was weird.
Well, because he pitched well, but then it's like, okay, well, he's not ramped up. So have him pitch the second, third, and fourth. Like,
so then they threw him in the rotation in the next start, and he got lit.
And he got lit. Yeah, it's weird. So it's like, okay, maybe it's just a bad start. But look, I mean, Ryan Weber is the one to me that, like, he is who we thought he was. I've been confused by the Ryan Weber stuff since day one.
Why he was on the roster.
Well, remember, we thought he was the next guy up to get DFA'd, like, six DFAs ago.
Yeah, he's been, like... I don't think I think he has like a 7-0 strikeout to walk ratio, but that's 7 walks to 0 strikeouts.
Yeah. So like, it's really 0-7, but yeah.
I was trying to.
You're funny. I appreciate it.
I was actually just going to bring up his Statcast data. I want to actually see how bad it is.
I mean, the thing with Weber is, I mean, Weber probably is pitching for his job his next start, except for that they don't really have anyone else.
Weber's Statcast data is really funny. So he's in the 54th percentile of exit velo, which is like average, 50th percentile in hard hit, which is average. So he gets squared up like an average amount of time. He is in the second percentile in expected on base, first percentile in expected ERA, second in expected batting average, third in expected slugging, seventh percentile in whiff and 13th percentile in barrel percentage. That's very, 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 very bad. That's like among the worst of any qualified pitcher.
Yeah, that's no good. It's no good. I mean, look, the problem is if you look down at Pawtucket, Kyle Hart's the only guy that's stretched out.
Yeah, we'll probably get to this when we talk about, like, yeah. But, like, Brian Mott is not coming up. Like, he's not ready. Dylan Covey, who they gave two innings to, isn't stretched out. Like, Kyle Hart's the only one we've been watching all the games who's going more than two or three
innings.
How many
innings did Gonsalves get this week?
Two.
Two, yeah.
And then Mata went three. And he
How stretched out is Brian Johnson?
I don't know. I haven't seen him pitch yet.
I mean, he's pitched. But
I know. I haven't been watching when he's pitched, but I saw, like, they just don't have any other bodies, which I think is kind of something Ron Renicky alluded to when they talked about
it. He literally said it.
He's like, well, who are we going to throw out there instead of Ryan Weber? And it's like, they're not wrong. They can't go two openers. Like, that's just too taxing on the bullpen. So,
well, they were the first time through the rotation, they did like a bullpen day and an opener. So it was kind of like, you know, and there is a distinct difference. We've talked about it on the show before. An opener is you pitch someone for an inning and then a guy comes in to pitch four or five innings. A bullpen day is, you know, you pitch someone for two innings or three innings. The next guy comes in and pitches two or three innings, and you just try and get through the game that way.
Exactly.
So it's yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot more to say about the, like, I guess just in terms of bright spots, Eovaldi looks good. He looks like a solid mid-rotation guy. Martin Perez, actually, other than that first start, has been good. He's not giving up a lot of contact. Hitters are not hitting his cutter, and he's throwing it a ton, which is exactly what we expected him to do. So he looks like, I feel like in a normal rotation, if he was your fifth guy, you'd be pretty satisfied.
Oh yeah, I'd be completely fine with him even as the four with an injury at the top.
But the problem is just he's the two, and then
the clear two.
Bullpen, like, yeah, Workman has been, I think, decent. Like Barnes had that bad outing. The bullpen really hasn't had to do, like, seen that much. I mean, Phillips Valdez has been very good. I was actually looking at his like Statcast stuff. He's
Yeah.
highly regarded by that. He's in like the 85th percentile or higher in almost every category.
I mean,
so,
Phillips Valdez could be this year's like Rays bullpen find.
I was just seeing like Marcus Walden. But yeah, other than barrel and K percentage and whiff, he's like above 70 and everything. So that's pretty good. He just doesn't give up a lot of hard contact. That's like what he's good at. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the rotation and everyone's just talked about the pitching. I think we should talk about the lineup because I have some issues and I think it sounds like you do too.
Well, so the thing that I was looking at, and I know where you're going to get to. I'll keep mine quick. I mean, Michael Chavis is being used in a straight platoon with Mitch Moreland.
Yeah.
Which, look, I've said on here before. So to me, looking at Chavis is 2019. He came up and lit the world on fire for like 23 games. And then he was legit awful for 20 more games. And then for the rest of the year, until he got hurt in August, he was like, look, if you compare him to major league second baseman last year, he had about the same OBP and hit for about 60 points more or 70 points more of slugging. The problem was he was also striking out at like a 33% clip, which portends issues down the road. I felt like the two problems I had with him coming into the year were the strikeout rate and his proclivity to get hurt, frankly, because he has suffered a major injury every year he's been in the system since 2016. In 2016, he like hurt his thumb and in his first game back, broke his finger and like played on it the rest of the way and was terrible. In 2017, he had an elbow injury that was messing with him the first couple of months. 2018, he had pulled his oblique in spring training, was suspended, and then at the end of the year, he missed the Arizona Fall League because of a sore wrist. And then last year, he had that shoulder injury at the end of the year that led to him going on the DL and sitting out the rest of the year on August 11th. So he's had a significant injury every year since 2016. So you can't, for that reason, and because of basically the questions about his bat, you can't just hand him a starting job. That said, I'm very surprised that he hasn't played any second base yet. Like, not a single game at second. And it's not like Jose Peraza has lit the world on fire.
No.
Chavis is only starting against lefties. He's only pinch hitting against lefties. Like, it's not like he's got a heavy platoon split. I would like to see Chavis get some more run. The problem is, you know, look, Jose Peraza isn't some, like, 38-year-old veteran who's gone next year. He's a guy who's going to be here for a bit, so he needs to get some run too. But I'm just very surprised that Chavis is in a straight platoon with Moreland, Ian.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if part of it is more not – I know Chavis kind of has those reverse platoon splits, but I wonder if it honestly is more to do with Moreland and they just don't want – they want to limit his exposure against righties – or sorry, lefties. And there's not really anyone to – like there's no one for him to – sorry, there's no one else to platoon at first base.
And they've played him a lot versus lefties. Moreland, I mean, sorry, they've faced a lot of lefties. I think they've split the first base reps almost in half.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it. So Moreland has 17 at-bats against righties this year, and Chavis has 9. And against
that doesn't make any sense. What?
I'm looking at the 2020 regular season stats of the Red Sox right now.
Moreland only has 17 at-bats against right-handed pitching?
That's what it says, yeah. And against lefties, Chavis has 16 at-bats, and Moreland has 4. I'm on RedSox.com right now.
Okay, interesting.
So I think that shows two things. A, how many lefties they faced this year.
Yeah, they have. They faced a bunch.
That they just don't want Moreland facing lefties. I think it's more that than Chavis, because, I mean, Chavis isn't really hitting lefties that hard.
Yeah, you know, Moreland's got 21 plate appearances and Chavis has 26. So Chavis has actually played more than Moreland.
Yeah, they've just faced a ton of lefties.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. Chavis has been bad, except against that last game against the Rays, which is the first real, like, good game of the season. Mm-hmm. And I'm still very concerned. I honestly do think his ultimate role is what he is doing right now, like a platoon guy. I don't think he's an everyday player.
But they need to find out.
But I think that in this season, it might be worth more just give him every day at bats and see what you have.
Yeah, and the thing, the other problem is that with the way the bench is constructed, you have both Lynn and Aruz on the bench, who are both middle infielders by trade. So if you're trying to get everyone into games and you're going to spell Peraza for a day, it's probably one of those two going in.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, that's why if you look at the...
I mean, Peraza's the backup shortstop, it looks like. Because I remember there was a point where Aruz went in and Peraza moved over to short when Bogarts was banged up for a game or two.
Yeah, because if you look at it, like, Aruz has 9 at-bats this year and Lynn has 9 at-bats this year. Like,
and they've each played in 4 games. They've each played more games than Plawecki, the backup catcher.
Yeah, yeah. And Chavis has played 8, Moreland 7. Like, I don't know. That's not the most. I agree that they need to just give Chavis an everyday job just to see what he is. But yeah, I think the thing we really need to talk about is Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, because it's bad.
Him and the lineup construction, I have major issues with what they're doing.
Why is he still leading? I mean, let's put it this way: they have an off night tonight. Benintendi needs to not be leading off tomorrow.
He needs to be hitting 9.
Yes,
he should be hitting. He should be hitting 8th or 9th. And I understand if you don't want to have him and Bradley back to back, then hit one of them 7th and put Peraza 8th.
Yeah,
because Alex Verdugo should be the everyday leadoff hitter for this team, and I don't think it's really a question. Like, he can hit righties, he can hit lefties. I know it's small sample this year so far. He hasn't hit righties really well, which is weird. But like in his career, he doesn't have platoon splits. Mm-hmm. He puts together quality of at bats, and
yeah,
I think just most importantly, like, Andrew Benintendi cannot hit the ball hard at all right now, especially to the pull side. And I don't know what's going on with him, but if you want to check on my Twitter, I retweeted something that Red Sox Stats, brought to you by Chico's Bail Bonds, posted that was just a mashup of every single time Benintendi has put the ball in play this year. And it's bad. Like, he's hit like one ball hard the entire season. And if you look at the Statcast data, it completely backs that up. Like, his ground ball rate has exploded from, like, I want to say 30% to 55%, I believe.
Do you think he's hurt?
I don't know. His ground ball rate is 55%, up from 39%. His line drive rate is 5% this year. And he's pulling the ball like 13% less than he was last year. He's just not pulling the ball at all. And among the other stuff, like, in terms of hard hit right exit velo, he's in the bottom 10th percentile of all of baseball. Like, it just doesn't make sense, because having seen him in the minors and seen him extensively, his thing was he just hit hard line drives to all fields.
Yes.
And
yes,
he's not doing that, like, to any field anymore. And I just don't know what it is, like, whether it's the pressure of hitting leadoff, whether it's just, it doesn't make sense because he's striking out a ton too. He's walking a lot, which he always is going to do, but he's got 12 strikeouts in like 38
at
bats.
39 plate appearances. He's got 12 strikeouts and 9 walks. And some might see that and say, well, at least he's walking. I see that and I say, that's a guy that's taking pitches because he doesn't want to hit.
Yeah. He's 2 for 29 this year. Like,
so I mean, something needs to change there. And I mean, I'm worried because
I just don't think he should be hitting leadoff. That's the big thing for me. Like, he has no business getting at the top of the order.
Well, and the thing that we're going to start having to talk about if this continues, right, is what do you do with this team? Because, you know, we've talked before about a window of competition for a core, right? This core is only together through 2022.
Yeah.
Xander Bogaerts has an opt-out in 2022.
I mean, I guess you can't say that now because we don't know what the financials of baseball
look
like.
He's almost certainly opting out.
Pre-COVID, he was opting out 100%.
If JD Martinez doesn't opt out this year, he's gone in 2022.
And he's going to be 36 anyway.
Chris Sale, who knows at this point what will happen with him, but if he comes back, he's got an opt-out in 2022.
Eduardo Rodriguez has 2 more years after this year, I think.
Eduardo Rodriguez is a free agent after 2021.
Oh, no, so he's a free agent after next year.
He's a free agent after next year. There are a couple of players who also come on. I know Devers is 2023. Bradley is this year. Benintendi is 2022.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're in a precarious position.
Yeah.
Eovaldi's 22. Like,
Eovaldi's the other 22. Yeah.
This is the thing, is just when you don't have high minors prospects to augment your team, this is what you get.
And
as, I mean, it was weirdly written, but there was a Ken Rosenthal article today, which didn't do a good job explaining this, but he basically said that the Red Sox have no homegrown players on the roster, which isn't right. But what he meant to say was just they don't have a single guy who's a rookie in the who was developed by the system on their active roster, which is right. That is true. And it's like you look around the league and you look at the impact young guys are having. You know, you look at like thinking about today, the Rangers game. Anderson Tejeda came up from high A and hit a home run at a steal and like 2 more hits. He had like 3 hits in his major league debut.
Right.
But like the Angels are calling up Joe Adell. You know, the Mariners fans are clamoring for them to call up guys like Kelenic. Like, you've got this wave of high-end talent around the game. And the Red Sox, other than, I think, Jeter Downs, I don't think they have another impact guy who's close to big league ready, because I don't think Jaron Duran's an impact guy. Like, they're in a very strange position that I agree we need to delve into more on the next episode.
Well, and the problem with the Duran is, what do you do with him? Like, come up unless they trade Bradley or someone gets hurt.
Yeah, and I think, and I don't think they're going to be turning center field over to him next year. Like, would you?
I could see it. If Bradley leaves, I could see it.
Well, if you're going to do that, then I think you need to give him major league exposure this year, because you can't have him facing being alternate sighting the entire season.
But here's the thing, right? I mean, Bradley's got a 685 OPS.
Okay, but he's also 0 for his last 17. So, like,
yeah. I mean, the point I was going to make is that could you bring him back on a one or two year deal?
Oh,
cheap?
Bradley. Yeah, I could see that.
Like, especially the problems Benintendi's had, because to me, before the situation before the Betts trade, and frankly, even after the Betts trade, was you've got Benintendi in left, Verdugo in right, Bradley gives way to Duran. After a full year in AAA, he proves he's ready, but you've got a year of evaluating him. Now, you've got an uncertain financial situation that could let you bring Bradley back. And B, you don't know what the heck you're getting out of Benintendi. For all we know, Duran winds up in left.
Well, and that's
like a Britt Gardner type of left fielder.
But we also don't know what Bradley is. Like, he's a good defender, we know that. But offensively, you have no idea what you're getting out of him.
Well, I think you do, and you know that you don't know.
You bank on 230, and if it's anything better, you're happy.
I mean, that's the thing. You know that it's going to be streaky. You know he's going to have stretches of a week or more when he's going to carry your team offensively, and he's going to have similar stretches where he has to hit ninth, and like you just accept the out every time through the order.
Yeah,
like he's doing right now.
Yeah,
he's got to be the streakiest hitter I can remember them having in a
like,
while.
I mean, this season is such a great like example of that. He started the season with 3 straight multi-hit games, had another hit, and then didn't have a hit for a week, and he has 1 hit since July 27th.
Yeah. By the way, it's my fault for picking him up in fantasy baseball. But Yeah, it's maddening. But to me, the you know, there are a bunch of line of questions. Look, Xander Bogaerts is doing Xander Bogaerts things. Rafael Devers worried me at first. He definitely did not come into summer camp in the best shape.
No,
he's ever been in.
He was hefty.
I think he's going to get it straightened out. This is what he does.
He's getting better. He's being fine. Like, he's making good defensive plays. The thing with Devers is a little concerning is just he's striking out a ton again and not walking at all, which is something he didn't do last year.
Right. Yeah, 16-2 K to walk ratio.
He did do that in the minors. He's really just been expanding the zone in the games I watch, and that's a little concerning to me. But I still have faith that he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, J.D. Martinez hasn't gone deep yet, which I didn't realize until now.
He's also been not good and openly talking about how much not being able to, like, look at video in-game has hurt him.
And I wonder if we're just going to have to accept this is what he is this year.
Yeah, understandable. Like, if it throws off your routine, and he's someone who seems very routine-oriented, then it's not a lot you can do.
Yep.
And then, like, Christian Vasquez is, like, carrying their offense. Yeah. Like, he's the best hitter on the team, so.
I mean, look, baseball reference war, Vasquez has 0.7, Bogaerts has 0.4, and your next guy up is Kevin Pillar.
Yeah, he's been very good this year.
Who's been good, followed by Mitch Moreland with 0.3. Like, Phillips Valdez is your number five player in B-War.
And this is the thing, like, you don't want to say it. You can never say this going into the season, but they had to have known they weren't going to be very good. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's yes and no, because, again, like, you didn't know. I mean, going into when?
Going into, like, the restart.
Because the thing is, it's like, if you've got Eduardo Rodriguez, Taylor, and Darwinson Hernandez, that helps on the pitching side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, that's fair. One less start for Matt Hall, or, you know, bulk relief appearance every time through the order. Like, you know, Matt Hall, of course, today got sent down along with Chris Mazza at the cut down to 28, which, by the way, they're going to be at 28 members of the roster for the rest of the season.
And which I think the biggest impact for that is that it makes it really easy. They're going to keep a Ruse the whole year now.
Clearly.
Obviously.
And I think they're actually going to try and keep Zue Lin the whole year now, too. I thought that he was sure going to get DFA'd. If not at the 28-man cut down, then the 26. And that's good, because I think, look, next year Aruz is going to be in either Portland or Worcester, which is going to be weird to say.
Portland probably, but yeah.
You need someone to fill that kind of utility infielder and a little bit of outfield role, and Lynn's that guy, and you've got him for like 3 more years or something.
And it's also like Lynn's an example of what we talked about a lot with Dabrowski, where don't go pay Brock Holt $4 million to do that. Just put Zue Lin on the roster. He's making the minimum. Let him do it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it's just a poor allocation of resources if you're paying a vet to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty much, I mean, we're obviously going to continue to talk about the major league team. I'm interested to see some of the things I'm going to be watching over the next couple of weeks, obviously, is what goes on with Benintendi. And then obviously Chavis and Devers, kind of, can they start turning the corner a little bit? Because the pitching, there's not a lot you can say there. It is what it is. And then I think the other thing is, does Bobby Dalbec get called up? I think it was interesting that they have him on the taxi squad, so he's ready and close. So they clearly thought it was more important for him to be with the team in Tampa than back in Boston getting at bats. So that, to me, that signals they think he's ready to go.
Which was very interesting, yeah.
Because we had to talk about it like privately, but if it's a pitcher, I tend to think it was kind of like, who is fungible and won't disrupt their throwing program, so just kind of bring up anyone.
Well, you could say that. Go ahead.
No, just the Mike Schwarren, someone who just kind of, they are what they are. Like, that's fine for a position player. I think if they were just like whatever, they would have called up Yairo Munoz or like Cesar Puello. But the fact that Dalbec there says to me that they were strongly considering adding him to the roster, it was coincided with because Chavis had been so bad.
Or maybe call him up for bring this guy on the taxi squad now, let him see how this works, because he's now, it's kind of like, you know how they would do with rookies where they bring them up on a road trip?
Yeah.
They'd call him up for a week and then send him down and be like, now that you see how this works, you'll know when we need you.
Yeah, but it's so this year that I don't know if that's as like
valuable. Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting to me, because on the one hand you don't need a middle infielder because you've got Lynn and Aruz on the roster. Outfield, they don't have anyone in AAA. They've got three outfielders in not AAA, at the alternate training site, sorry. It's Pueyo, Duran, and Andreoli. Might as well bring up Dalbec for the taxi squad. I get it. But yeah, it was Dahlbeck and Mike Schwarren along with Jet Bandy, who was the third catcher. Yeah, I found that very interesting, and I'm intrigued to see if they're going to rotate out who's on that taxi squad or if it's going to be consistent. That they're going to, you know, are they going to stick with Dahlbeck? Because I think that will say a lot about what they think about the guys they've got in Pawtucket at McCoy Stadium right now. You know, Marco Hernandez has been hitting the ball very well down there, but you've got Aruz and Lynn. I just, you know, I don't see the need as opposed to, you know, if something happens to Chavis, Dahlbeck's playing. Whereas if something happens to Peraza, Marco Hernandez isn't playing. Marco Hernandez is on the roster and Lynn and Aruz are probably, oh, maybe Hernandez is playing.
No, I bet Hernandez would get
some Hernandez would probably play. That's true. But at any rate,
but
we'll
see. I just think that's going to be interesting, and maybe that's a good time to transition to talking about the alternate training site workouts.
Yeah, I mean, so as we said, we've been watching these things. It's been great. Ian, there's some headlines. Do you want to just get into one or two guys that you want to talk about? We're at about, you know, 35 minutes, so we can't expound too much. But and you can only tell so much from video, but there's been some interesting stuff.
We've been watching it. We've been putting some videos up of
we meaning of, you. You can tell to your own horn.
Stuff that's happening on our on our socials, on my Twitter, and then the site Twitter's also had it. It's just been nice to be able to watch baseball, and I think that kind of the obviously there's a lot of pitchers, and I think it's an easier to get looks at pitchers because they are throwing full innings, whereas the hitters it's very sporadic at bats, and you can't really see anything.
It's not like there's a lineup. It's not like there's a box score.
Very casual. But I think kind of the highlights for me so far have been seeing Jake Groom and Brian Mata pitch. Mata's thrown twice since I've been watching, and Groom's thrown once, which was his first start.
Yep.
And I think we should probably talk about Groom first because
those,
I think you
those,
you
those were Mata's two outings, by the way.
Yeah, Paul Abbott had some very interesting things to say about Groom that I think are worth discussing because they kind of echo some concerns we've heard from other people about him.
Well, it's, I mean, let's get it. Basically, in the interview, this took place the day before he debuted down there, and he, you know, we were asked about Groom, and people were talking about like, oh, the guy's working his way back from Tommy John. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, he came back last year, guys. But Abbott mentioned something about how in his bullpens, Groom, he's still learning how to throw a bullpen at full effort. He said that he's basically been doing it at like a 5 out of 10 effort wise. And it's just, he's like, look, he's just never learned how to throw a bullpen. I think he was being a little diplomatic because Groom was drafted in 2016. I would hope after 3 years in the system, he'd know how to throw a bullpen. I think he was kind of diplomatically saying we need more effort out of the kid. I'm going to be honest, you know, we raved about the shape he got himself into last year when he came back from Tommy John. He's certainly not like, you know, Pablo Sandoval or anything like that, but he's definitely, you know, looking a little bit bigger. So, you know, you wonder whether that's good or bad weight. That was interesting. That was kind of eye-opening.
Because I talk about his coming effort. Into the draft, there were just the concerns about his effort level, and amateur scouts who saw him echoed that concern. You know, they thought the talent is legit, but is he someone who cares that much? And they didn't know. And, you know, he's definitely made strides since he's been in the system, and seeing him out on the mound was good because the stuff, it still looked pretty good. You know, as the fastball was up to 94 per the Pawtucket broadcast, either a couple good curveballs.
I thought they said he topped out at 95, but maybe it was 94.
I thought it was 94.
I'm thinking of someone else maybe.
He threw like one good changeup, but it's still just, he's so far away. He's so far behind on innings. Like, I still just have no idea how to get a read for him.
Yeah, he threw to three batters. Huh?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Go
Groom.
Ahead.
Groom threw to three batters as a live BP. Threw all of his pitches. Had a couple that looked good. Had a couple. I mean, he had one, I remember one changeup that looked real nice. The curveball was the big breaker. I don't know that it was quite as sharp as we've seen it, Ian.
No.
The curve.
Yeah,
I mean, with him, it's going to be a process. Obviously, you know, I was asked about this on Twitter. There's no chance he's pitching in Boston this year. He's there to get work.
No, like, he was super structured, too. Like,
he threw 20 pitches to four hitters. Or sorry, he threw five pitches each to four hitters. Like,
was it four hitters? I thought it was three.
It was four. So like and it wasn't even full at bats, but yeah, he threw a couple like good. He threw a good changeup to Jeter Downs. He threw some fastballs, had some zip. But as you said, conditioning, it's just a lot still to work on, and he's got a lot of development to go mentally and mm-hmm. just with how he handles himself on the mound. So
right.
Who knows? It'll be interesting to see what they do with him as the kind of the season goes on, if whether they try to actually stretch him out and like have him throw longer outings, or if he gets into simulated games. We'll see there.
Yeah. But Mata, his first outing, Ian, I think was electric. In his second outing, he kind of, you know, we learned why he's, you know, still a work in progress.
Yeah. First outing, he was just blowing guys away. He threw, I think, it was like seven. He faced seven hitters, struck out the first two, struck out three, walked one guy, but, you know, he just didn't give up a lot. He gave up no hard contact at all. And he still hasn't given up a hit, actually, in his two outings now, looking at it.
Really?
But I think the most interesting thing is that first outing. What? Oh, go ahead.
Well, keep in mind, too, folks, hit is kind of a relative term here because they're playing with, like, two outfielders.
Yeah, but Bruce Crabbe announces whether it's a hit or a
But that's what I'm saying, is a hit or not is sometimes Bruce Crabbe, you know, saying whether or not the fielder would have caught it.
When I'm watching it, I make my own rulings on what it would be.
Oh, okay.
Also.
Good.
So, but anyway, in that first outing, he located his fastball. He threw some really good curveballs, which is a good thing, which is interesting because his curveball was kind of like a meh fourth pitch to me last year. So it's interesting that he's relying on it a lot now. Threw some good cutters. Didn't really throw his changeup in the first outing. But the second outing was not as good in terms of his fastball, especially in his third inning of work. He kind of really lost his release, and his command and control was all over the place. Like, I rewatched it a few times, and he threw, like, I think four pitches to the backstop or, like, past the catcher at various points. He had a lot of trouble locating. He was consistently missing up and away, and just a lot of long at bats, very inefficient. I mean, he didn't give up a hit and he gave up a lot of weak contact, but still it was just a kind of a reminder that while he's got some really intriguing stuff, he's not polished. And there's just a long way to go for him to work on his pitchability and, you know, how he uses and sequences all his pitches and commanding the strike zone. And he's just got a lot of development to go still there.
Yep.
Even with raw stuff, he was up to 98, like his fastball sat 96 per the broadcast, which has the access to the Statcast data. So the raw stuff is there. It's just kind of the finer points of pitching that he still needs to work on.
Well, and keep in mind too, you know, the major leaguers had 3 weeks to ramp up, and we are seeing all kinds of injuries across baseball, especially to pitchers. I don't want Brian Mata rushing to pitch in this season. I want Mata to get a full month plus down in AAA at the training site before they're even thinking about it. I'm not rushing him. I don't think he's an option until September, frankly. Keep in mind, these guys weren't added to the alternate training site until just before the season started. So he's on like week two of spring training. He's not ready yet. So, you know, the guys that are ready are Kyle Hart. Right now, you know, the guys that just got sent down, Matt Hall, Chris Mazza,
Brian Johnson,
Shawarin, Brian Johnson. Yep. You know, the guys that are rehabbing are getting close. Domingo Tapia, Robinson Layer, you know, relievers, you know, Groom's not coming up. Mata's not ready. You know, I don't think Gonsalves, who they just got, isn't ready. Hauk isn't ready yet. They might let him go longer as well. You know, they're just starting to ramp up. And so that you got to keep that in mind. Ian, on the offensive side of the ball, anybody sticking out to you? It seems like Marco Hernandez puts something hard into play every game.
Yeah, he just hits the ball hard. I mean, He's also one of the more advanced hitters there, I would say. Like, he's always been able to hit. He just never can stay healthy, and he's not good defensively.
Right.
So, I think just Jeter Downs has looked pretty good in some of the games I've watched. He's hit. He hit an absolute tank off someone. I cannot remember who. I'll have to look.
And by the way,
but,
you squint, and it looks like Mookie Betts.
Yeah, he does. He's got that little pitch, pre-pitch.
He's like, got the same kind of pre-pitch thing as Betts.
I just like how loose he is at the plate. Like, yeah. Obviously, this is our first time seeing him, and his hands are electric. He's just really loose and just like a quick twitch guy at the plate. So he's really exciting. I think the bigger thing to talk about is Jaron Duran has mm-hmm. completely redone his hand position pre-pitch. So he's kind of like, he's lowered his hand significantly. And to me, it kind of like reminds me of what Chase Utley used to do. You know, he has his hand starting low in that slightly open stance, but then he does caught. He just, when during his load, he brings them up. But the whole idea is, I talked to a few scouts about it. And the reason that teams will have their players do this is if they're trying to get the launch angle higher and get them to hit under the ball and kind of drive the ball in the air more. And for someone like Duran, that makes a lot of sense because he's a big guy. He's like 6'2", 210 pounds. Like, he's not exactly a small player. But he's always hit the ball hard, just not a lot in the air. It's just all been on the ground or line drives. And so if they can make a subtle change like this and allows him to drive the ball more, he's definitely becomes a lot more interesting in my eyes long term.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if it sticks. He definitely jacked one the other day. It was like 438 or something. So we'll see how it plays out. I definitely could see him getting some run at the end of the year. Ian, should we jump into emails at this point, I think? Yeah, let's jump into emails again, folks. podcast@soxprospects.com. Send us your emails. We appreciate it. Let's start with our most recent ones, actually, Ian, and work our way back, because I think the recent emails have been a little bit easier to hit if my Gmail will just respond. There we go. All right. Our first question comes from William Biggs, and Mr. Biggs has two questions. First, he says, after the injury to Mike Soroka, do you think it might be a viable option to ship Eovaldi, presumably to Atlanta? The reason it makes somewhat sense is they threw a ton of money at Cole Hamels, and he's basically out for the season, and the only pitchers they have are highly touted yet don't have MLB experience. Mueller and Wilson. I know Bryce Wilson. Who's the other guy he's talking about?
Kyle Mueller and Tommy John. So I think he meant to say Ian Anderson, probably.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know who the other guys he's talking
about. It's Kyle Mueller. I'm telling you who it is.
Okay. No. Okay. Right. So I talked about this on our forum the other day. Trading Eovaldi is tough because as it is right now, you need to get two major league quality starters for the 2021 season because Chris Sale's not going to be ready yet. Yeah. You're going to get Erod back. Hopefully. Followed by Eovaldi and Perez, and you need one more. So you need at least like a starter and a half.
Yeah.
To start the year. If you trade Eovaldi, you now need to get another starter for next year. You're kind of right. Like, I don't see that. I could see it happening, but I think it's almost like where in the Betts trade they got back Verdugo. You would have to get something like that to trade Eovaldi, where like you get your 2021 starter.
And the thing is that he's not good enough to get you someone who
that's exactly it. Exactly.
And the other issue I think too is what you're gonna have with him is he might make too much money for a lot of teams. It's bad to say, but he's making 19 million a year, I think, or 17 million in a post-COVID economy. We have no idea what that looks like for most teams, so I don't know if you're going to get a lot of teams that are willing to take on a $17 million pitcher to be their, you know, third, fourth starter.
Right. So that's, I mean, I just don't know how practical it is. I get where he's coming from. You know, it'd be nice to kind of reset that money, but
if you're going to trade him, you're doing it because you're completely rebuilding and you're trading him. You're trading JD Martinez this year. Yep. You're trading Workman. You're trading Barnes. You're considering trading Bogarts. You're trading everyone if you're trading Eovaldi.
Yeah. You're just blowing the whole thing up.
Which seeing how Boston fans are taking this year, I don't think they would take a complete rebuild either. So. No.
Second question is, how did you feel about Groom's sim outing and his potential going forward? Love the alternate site streams and wish Nesson would incorporate more of the minors to help fans fully see the future stars of the Sox. We talked about Groom's sim outing. His potential going forward, Ian, is not really something we got fully into. It depends.
Yeah. So I had actually, someone asked me a good question on Twitter, which basically like, how can you project Groom to be a back end guy, but also say he could be like a number 2-3 starter. And it's a fair question. And I think he's just someone who has such a wide range of projections because there's so much unknown. Like, right. You could tell me Jay Groom never made it above double A and I would believe you. Mm-hmm. You could tell me Jay Groom is a major league reliever and I'd believe you. You could tell me Jay Groom's a major league back end starter and I believe you. And you could tell me he's a number two starter and I believe you. Like, I think all think they're plausible outcomes. Whereas for most prospects, you can't say that. But he's just such a unique case that it's kind of, we're just throwing darts at this point with him.
The error bands are very wide.
He's just missed so much time.
Yeah.
He's never had a full season. He's thrown like 70 innings in his Red Sox career.
Right. Right.
And
it's
just, there's just like when he's on, his stuff is legit, but I just have, there's concerns about his health. There's concerns about his conditioning. Like, he just has so many question marks that there's just so much that could go wrong. But I mean, I talked to a scout who watched that outing, his first, you know, whatever it was, live BP, and who said basically, just watching it and just having seen him before, that I think ultimately he's going to end up as a reliever was his thought. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I could buy that completely. Like, there's just such a wide range of outcomes for him. And I don't think his ceiling or his, you know, whatever has changed. It's just kind of like your shruggy face, like throw it. Who knows at this point? There's a long way to go. And this was such a key year for his development, which is why he's on the alternate site squad, even though he's not going to play in the majors this year. And yeah, I think they're even kind of confused with what to do with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, just really quick, one thing about the last episode I also wanted to add is, you know, we were kind of projecting who would be in the alternate site. You know, I do wonder with the cutdowns going away, how that's going to work. You know, how are you going to try and get a guy like Acasas on there? And by the way, they only go for like 4 more weeks. This doesn't go through September, I don't think. The way Abbott was talking the other day, I think they've only got 4 or 5 more weeks. So
that doesn't make sense. Why would they stop it? They're going to need players in September.
I guess. I don't know. It's interesting.
That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe he was just automatically on the like normal minor league schedule. Yeah, that makes sense.
They can't stop it, because I know that they're going to go with 5-man taxi squad for the rest of the season, but you're going to need more than 5 players, as the Marlins have shown. So
it's true. It's true. Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggs. Our next question comes from Eric. He says, "Hey guys, longtime listener, first time caller here. Just wondering why, with all the turmoil the pitching staff has experienced thus far, would the Red Sox not explore a reunion with Stephen Wright? It wasn't that long ago this guy was in line to start the All-Star game. Thanks again, John Farrell. Is it just because of his previous suspension? Thanks, Eric." Number of things, Ian. First thing that comes to mind is his knee. He never got healthy after the knee microfracture surgery. Part of it might be the suspension. I mean, he isn't hooked on with another team, I don't think, either, has he?
No. And, I mean, he's 35 years old. He has been suspended for different things now, twice, like PEDs and domestic violence or whatever, it's domestic assault. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure to put this the correct term. And I think he underwent Tommy John surgery last fall, so he's not going to be ready to pitch anyway.
I forgot about the Tommy John. Good call.
Yeah, so it kind of, that's probably the biggest reason.
That's a very good call. Thanks for the question, Eric. Next question comes from Ford Murphy. I think my mother used to drive one of those. Anyway, hey guys, love the pod. Was wondering if you could break down what you have seen from Mata, Groom, and Hauk in the sim starts this season. We've already gotten into that. Didn't really talk about Hauk too much, Ian. They say they want to kind of, you know, stretch him out and maybe start him. I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, nothing I saw in his first outing said he could start to me. He threw 2 innings, faced 7-8 hitters. He threw a couple good slider cutter thingies, a couple good sinkers or two seams, but he also gave up a couple of hard hit single to Jeter Downs, a home run to Marco Hernandez. He hit John Andreoli, walked a couple guys. Like, just, yeah, I don't think he's a starter, and nothing he's shown has kind of changed my opinion of that.
Yeah. I just think it's a bullpen arm. It could be a very good one, but I don't see it playing in the rotation. Next email comes from Tim Harding. Tim says, "Next year's draft, do this year's results determine the order? I read somewhere it will be based on 2019 standings." Thanks for the email, Tim. The answer to that is we don't know, and they're probably going to wait to announce that until they see how far we get into this season.
Well, yeah, it's up to Rob Manfred's discretion, so we have no idea.
We don't know. My guess and it's a complete guess, is that if we get far enough into the season, like if we get into September, they might use this year's standings. But
I bet if we get past the trade deadline, they use this.
Well, if we get past the trade deadline, and it also depends, though, like how many teams have like COVID breakouts and like missed games. Because like right now, you know, they literally just had to today completely change the schedule for a number of teams so that Phillies and Marlins can make games up.
I will say I give them credit for being flexible with the schedule. Sure. Like teams are giving up home games. Not that it matters this year. But, like, for example, today the White Sox lost a home game to accommodate the Cardinals, like, things like that. Or, sorry, the Cardinals lost a home game to accommodate, like, because they're – it's just weird, the whole thing. And teams need to be flexible. But, we're only making guesses. We don't know.
Yeah, we have no idea is the answer. Because I've seen that question on Twitter a bunch of times, too. But, yeah, thanks for the email, Tim. Our next question is from Jamie in the UK. He says, hope you're well and staying safe. Two questions, one quick and one probably longer. Minor league question. If the Red Sox make the playoffs, do you see them adding Jarren Duran as a pinch runner? Or if they trade JBJ, does he get fast-tracked? You know, I think if they trade JBJ, he's definitely up. Mm-hmm. I think there's any question. Adding him as a pinch runner, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, I mean, if they make the playoffs, I don't know if you do it just for like the. I guess it's not even a one game wild card anymore, isn't it? Three games.
I plan on just to be the pinch runner in extra innings.
But yeah, you could potentially do that, as you said, especially with the extra inning rule.
Well, and especially with a 28 man roster.
In the playoffs, it's not that though.
Oh, is it?
No, it's normal.
Okay, like, well, I could see them doing it before the playoffs. Frankly, yeah, in September, if the pitching staff gets its act together, and you need one fewer reliever.
I mean, at the end of the day, if an outfielder gets hurt, you have your choice of him, Cesar Pueyo, or John Andreoli. I would assume Pueyo would get a shot, especially if it's Kevin Pillar who gets hurt because they don't have a righty. But if it's one of the lefties, I could think you could see Duran.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So he says, secondly, if the season was to be shut down before August, I want to point out that he says, if the season was to be shut down before 31st August, i.e. before the luxury tax reset, do the Red Sox legally have a case to sue or appeal the rules, the league and or the team that may cause a shutdown, and then in parentheses it says Marlins, as clearly they were using this year to get below the line and their actions have stopped this. As always, great work from yourselves and the team. All the best, Jamie in the UK. Thanks, Jamie. I
doubt it. I could see why you would wonder that, because in the UK, stuff like that is happens often in the football world. So like now, a team was relegated because of a points deduction, and they're suing to like say that the points deduction shouldn't count because it was for things that happened before this year. Mm-hmm. And then another team got a points deduction, but for some reason, even though it was to do with things this year, they're not applying it until next season. So a team that got relegated is suing that because they say it should count for the season. So I can see, I don't think MLB teams would, Rob Manfred would allow MLB teams to sue MLB teams for things like that.
Well, I don't know whether or not he would allow it. It's more like just kind of, you know,
like unwritten. It's like an ownership thing.
The owners aren't going to sue MLB. You don't have a Maverick owner that would do that. They're all pretty much in lockstep. Maybe they could. I can't imagine it would stick. I mean, look, you would have to prove that the team was negligent in getting COVID. Like, that would be so hard to prove. So I just can't see it happening. And that's also a good segue really quick into one thing that Mike Andrews, our editor, our fearless editor-in-chief of the website, mentioned after the last episode. There was an issue that we were talking about. There was a question about drafts, salary caps, age limits, etc. He says they're anti-competitive by nature, but they are permissible under federal law when they are collectively bargained with the employee side, which is something I hadn't thought of. And then, of course, Ian made the very good point. Raised the question of how can they be collectively bargained when the people those rules impact aren't in the union, i.e. minor leaguers and amateurs. Mike says, very good question. There are long treatises and academic articles about it, and the Maurice Claret case challenged that back in 2003-2004. I don't think any of us is expert enough about it to talk knowledgeably about it, but you could Google that and kind of do some amateur research. But that was a good point that Mike brought up. But yeah, thanks for the email, Jamie in the UK. I need to get like a Sex Pistols edit to use for his intro music. Yeah, and our next question comes from Alex. And Alex says, hey, guys, wanted to say thanks for the very in-depth answer to my question about the antitrust exemption. Found your explanation extremely informative and enjoyed it quite a bit. I asked this question around the time of the shutdown, and at that time, nobody was sure what the season would look like. So the answer was understandably ambivalent. But now that we know what the season should look like, and assuming it gets finished, how do you see the organization acting in terms of prospect assignment at the start of 2021? Assuming, again, that things are back to normal. Especially considering prospects who might have split a level between the end of last season and the beginning of this one, Mata and Portland, for example. How much do you think the organization weighs a prospect's experience on the 60-man roster this season in addition in regards to their initial assignment for 2021? Thanks, Alex. I would say, I think if you're on the 60-man roster, that's an enormous leg up that you have on other players in terms of an assignment for this year because you're playing. But there are, Ian, we've discovered Gabriel Fidler from our site found some indie league teams and some minor league teams are like sponsoring like independent teams, basically. So, for example, the Sugarland Skeeters have like a 4-team league that has a bunch of players in it, including current Red Sox minor leaguers Tommy Joseph, Ryder Jones, and Cole Sturgeon, as well as some old friends. Henry Owens was pitching down there for a minute. Who the heck else? Jake Romanski was down there. I'm forgetting some other really good ones. But then there's also apparently the Lexington Legends in Kentucky have got a couple teams together of guys mostly from Kentucky. Cole Cottom is there. Chris McAmer, the guy that was released in the offseason, is playing there. I think, you know, guys need to be getting innings. We talked last time about Brendan Salucci playing in New Jersey for an independent, like, men's league sort of team just to get some work. Guys need to be playing, and I think that that's going to help them for next year and will be considered probably, but I think you're going to have to move guys up further than you would have had them in. I think you just, look, Mata's going to have to start in AAA, and plus keep in mind you're completely restructuring the minors next year. There's probably no short season. You know, it's going to change a lot about how they move guys around, how they assign guys. I hate to be ambivalent about it again, but I think we're just going to have to wait and see. And I don't know if you've got anything further than that.
No, I mean, it's who knows. I think if I had to guess, it would be more like the older college guys. They would push more aggressively.
Yep.
Whereas the less inexperienced guys, they might hold back more. But it's a yeah.
Yeah, we've got a projection on the website, but it's a guess. It really is a guess at this point. Our next email comes from Aiden and says, hey guys, I know there's a ton of talk around Jaren Duran all the time, but I find myself getting more hyped about him every time I see him play. So I wanted to get your opinions based on what you've seen so far in the Pawtucket scrimmages and such. We've already talked about that. It seems like his defense has been pretty good and he's been hitting well and running like he also has. He also looks jacked coming into camp and has had some really hard hit balls. Thoughts on Duran's changes at the beginning of the season and when we may see him come up. Thanks so much for everything you guys do with the podcast and the website. You guys are great. We did get into a lot of that already, but he does look like he's in very good shape. So that's a good call out by Aiden. He actually has looked pretty decent fielding in center field from what I've seen, Ian. I don't know if you've seen any different.
I mean, it's hard to say because there's no right fielder, so, and it's very informal defensively. But I think, yeah, just as we talked about, if he can tap into power, it's a lot more interesting.
Yep. Next question is from Aaron Mehta. Aaron, of course, has been on the show before. He's got a few questions. He says, I hope you guys are staying safe and sound. I apologize if this has already been tackled and I missed it, but a couple questions related to the taxi squad. First, what is it they're actually doing? My sense is it's basically extended spring training with a lot of batting practice and simulated games. But how do they balance guys like Groom who need teaching with guys who are just there as depth of the big league? There's no chance of them playing against other taxi squad teams. So how much can anyone get out of it? I think that's a concern because you're playing games with not a full outfield, not a full infield. You know, they're pulling guys in from base running because they're up next.
There was a great one where John Andreoli was playing outfield and just ran in mid pitch because he was actually on deck.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's just, I think it's just super informal. Extended spring training, similar to that, except in extended spring training, at least they are inner squad scrimmaging right every day because they have enough players to fill out two teams.
Well, they're playing other teams too.
In extended, yeah, I guess eventually they do that a little bit, but because it's more or less a continuation of regular spring training. But yeah, it's just mostly simulated game. They probably do the infield work, the batting practice, pitchers throw bullpens in the morning, and in the afternoon is live BPs and simulated game.
That's right. Pretty much it.
And they're not showing the BP or anything like that, but I know the other day they flipped the sim game and the BP because of the storm coming in.
Yeah, they are doing all that, too.
So it was, you know, they played the game in the morning, and then they were bringing out the batting cage for BP. So they're doing all of that as well. So guys are working on stuff. Our next question, which might be the last one, comes from Jake. Jake says, the question is, what kind of prospect return do you think the Sox could get for half a season of JBJ? Maybe Kevin Pillar. Probably way too early in the season to be asking this kind of question, but the season isn't looking good. I'd rather get something in return for those guys that will help the club in the future instead of just losing them to free agency while we aren't contending for anything. Anyone else in the big league team you guys think would be worth trading before the deadline to get prospects in return? Thanks. Keep up the good work. Love the pod and the site. Jake. Thanks for the question, Jake. Ian, I can't imagine. It depends how they're playing.
But I still don't think you're getting very much, because Bradley's going to be making like prorated like $5 million or whatever.
Yeah.
Pillar
is what he is.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at like I feel like a Marco Hernandez type at bat. Like, it's just,
well, look, the Red Sox got Alejandro Daaza for Luis Isla. Like,
it's like the reverse of that.
It's the reverse of that.
Yeah.
You know, when they traded, who'd they trade for Eduardo Nunez?
Sean Anderson. Gregory Santos.
Gregory Santos. I mean, that's maybe a best case.
But also, Nunez was under contract the following year.
Right, right. And, you know, probably.
Well, you're not getting very much. Like, the guys you would get something, I think, more than that would be either if you're trading a guy who has an extra year left, like Barnes, guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if like they did trade JD, they could get probably one decent prospect.
Well, and you probably would have to let the other team talk to him about his opt out.
Right. And like, same thing, like Workman, cause teams need bullpen. You might be able to get something for him, but yeah, there's not a lot. You're not getting very much for most guys.
Right.
Like, the way you're, if they want to completely rebuild the farm system, you're going to have to deal one of like the Bogarts, Vasquez. I mean, I think they should trade Christian Vasquez. They should consider it at least. But like, guys like that.
Yep. And we got one more question, Ian. This question's from Al Mendel, one of our patrons on patreon.com/SoxProspects. And I'm not going to read the whole email, but he basically was saying, signing a star player to a large contract doesn't happen in a vacuum. It reduces the resources available to sign other players. So consider the two options. Option A is extend Mookie Betts for 12 years at $365 million. And then in option B, he, you know, lays out extensions for Eduardo Rodriguez, Rafael Devers, Andrew Benintendi, Alex Verdugo, Michael Chavis, Brendan Workman, and Matt Barnes. That comes out to a total of about $365 million to sign those guys for 3, 5, 6 years. It all kind of depends. He says, which option would you choose? I love Mookie, but I would rather the Red Sox choose option B. I think it gives them the best chance to be competitive for the long term. I think it's a false choice, Ian. You extend the player. Like, look, what winds up happening, yes, eventually you run out of money. You know, eventually you have to try and move David Price to get under the CBT because of the fact that you extended Chris Sale, you signed Nathan Eovaldi to the contract you signed him to. You know, you took certain routes when maybe you would have been better off going younger at some positions and things like that. I don't think it's that choice. And plus, look, I mean, I'm not giving Michael Chavis a 6-year, $40 million contract right now. I'm not giving Andrew Benintendi 5 years, $50 million right now. I'm not giving Matt Barnes 3 years at 21 and Workman 3 years at 24 necessarily. Relievers, I just think, are very fungible. You know, look, Brendan Workman is the closer this year. If I had told you that during spring training of last year, you would have thought I was nuts. We thought he was going to get cut. You know what I mean? He was in danger of being cut last year, and now he's the closer. So, yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting thought, but to me, I don't think it's that kind of vacuum, and I think it just oversimplifies the paying the young guys side of it, Ian.
I agree. I don't think it's comparable, and I understand the construct, but I think a better way to look at it would be like more that, would you rather have Mookie Betts locked in for that long, or the guys you got for Mookie Betts plus like free agent X or whatever, someone off the roster? Right. Like the guys on the roster are already there, even if you trade Mookie Betts. Like,
right, right.
So, but I think, as we talked about it extensively when they traded Betts, we both agreed it was the right move at the time. And seeing the contract he got, I'm very happy for him. We talked about it last episode. I still would have been leery if I were the Red Sox and giving him 12 years. I would have been concerned about the last 3 years, 4 years. But would I have done it? Probably, at the end of the day. But still, yeah, I think it's kind of not exactly an apples to apples comparison.
Yeah, I mean, look, to give a guy that kind of a contract, you need all kinds of information, some that we have and some that we don't. I want projections. I want to know, like, I want to run, how is he going to age? What can we expect out of him? You know, what do the numbers say? So, yeah, but it's an interesting proposal. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. And thank you to all of our emailers. Again, it's podcast@soxprospects.com. Hit us up with your emails. We appreciate it. Got a couple more that are in the queue that we'll get to. One from idea from Joe that we'll hit in the future. And, of course, Matt, our buddy, had a question that had to do with one of the drafts when we eventually get around to that. Ian, we got to go. We've been on for too long. Been on way longer than we meant to. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Podcast Joe 2.0 for editing and producing the show. Thank you to all of you for listening and for supporting us on patreon.com/SoxProspects. Let me throw this out there, too. If there's a perk that would get you to contribute on Patreon, hit us up. Shoot us an email at podcast@soxprospects.com. We've got stuff on there right now, like you get props on the show. We've got names listed on our podcast archive on the website. What kind of things would you be interested in? Hit us up, podcast@soxprospects.com. What kind of Patreon perks would you be interested in? Last year we had the Patreon game updates that we can't really have this year. So maybe, you know, what could we do instead that you think would be useful that you would be interested in contributing to get access to? So let us know. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to Ian. Follow him at Ian Kundall, IANCUNDALL on Twitter. Follow me at SP Chris Hatfield, and make sure you follow the site at Sox Prospects. We're still rolling on with our draft retrospective series. Ian, this week is the big 2011 draft. So big week for the pod, for the draft
check
retrospectives.
Yes. More Mookie Betts talk. In there.
More Mookie Betts talk. More arrested draftees talk. It's a weird year, and I love it. But yeah, we appreciate you all for listening. Thanks so much. We'll be back in your eardrum soon with another episode.